a telegraph term meaning distance. Foxing, tuning the dials in search of distant signal. Program devoted to DXing, helping you enjoy this wonderful hobby even more. Welcome to the DX Party Line. Here are Rich and Lisa McVicker.
The NorDX Mystery Station.
Transitional Enhancement. No, it's not a religion.
And Arnie Coro tells us more of Radio Havana's early days. Cold piece of cheesecake along with a mug of steaming hot chocolate might be in order as you enjoy what's ahead. Crazy week here at HCJB, and the crazy might not be a good word for it. Very enjoyable week with our annual meetings, but with all that's going on, Lisa's at the meetings, and Rich is doing some recording right now. Lisa sends her very best, and Lord willing, she'll be back with us again next weekend. Well, the time has arrived. The big weekend is here. It's NorDX 95, the Nordic DX Championships. John Ekwall is one of the organizers of the contest. We've got him on the line from Sweden to tell us more about this weekend's contest, what to listen to, and where. John, what exactly are the NorDX Championships?
NorDX is a contest between the Nordic countries, and it started back in the 60s where Finland and Sweden have a contest It's a game between Sweden and Finland in all kinds of sports. But we started this in radio listening, so it has been hard times between Finland and Sweden the past 25 years.
Okay, it sounds like there's quite a bit of rivalry going on there between those two. Would someone from outside of the Nordic countries be interested in the contest, or would they be welcome to participate?
We often invite foreign DXs to participate, and back in 1984 we have a Nordic Open Championships, so the winner could be from outside Scandinavian countries or the Nordic countries. They managed quite well at that time. I think it was a German who was in third place.
Have you got any information on whether many people from outside of the Nordic countries are involved this weekend?
Yes, we have participation from Germany, the UK, United States, and Canada. So I think it's about 30 or 40 entries.
NorDX is known for setting up some special broadcasts for participants to be listening for over the course of the NorDX weekend. What would some examples of past special broadcasts be?
The past. It started back in maybe 1985 was one of the first when Radio Sit in Gambia was transmitting via the cable and wireless in Gambia. Then it went on with Radio TV Hong Kong. We all know about Radio St. Helena. And back in 91, we have a Christmas Island with the Norwegian have an arrangement. But it was a pity it was a very low-powered transmitter, so it wasn't able to hear here in Scandinavia or elsewhere in the world, I think. The problem was the Australian bit changed a frequency, the mid-25-meter band, and it was quite in the middle of the night, so the propagation was not favorable for anyone to hear it.
Maybe
maybe some year when there just happens to be a good solar flare on one weekend like that, it would have been possible.
Yeah, and a more powerful transmitter.
Now, on this year's official contest schedule, which participants have been receiving in their mail the last couple of weeks, there are a couple of mysterious black spots, and we assume this is something to do with a special broadcast this year. John, can you fill us in about these missing stations?
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit. The spot between 2230 and 2300 was intended for the British Forces Broadcasting Service in Gibraltar. I thought I had quite good contact, but finally they decided not to rebroadcast or relay any of these transmissions over their Navy facilities. So maybe they will come back in a year or two when we got the proper license. So the problem with this Nordic 95 is that it was just arranged in June 95, so we just have 3 months of arranging, and that's too short to get in the necessary context for making these special transmissions.
What would the station that is going to be in that time slot be?
It will be an odd station. It's not an ordinary station. It's Bangkok Radio on 8208 kilohertz.
Okay, and they're also on 6765 kilohertz. Don't want to give the wrong information here. 6765.
I think the best frequency is the 8 meg frequency.
Okay, well, there's a good chunk. Now, there's another time slot open on Sunday from 030 to 0100. What station would that be?
It's a substitute because we have some negotiations with some Caribbean station, and we didn't get any positive answer. We have a denial from Bermuda, as they don't have any HF facilities. So I waited in the minute up to now. So we decided to have a broadcast band station, which is Premier Radio in London, and they will transmit on 1305, 1332, and
1413. John, how long have you been in this hobby?
I've been more or less active since 1965.
And do you have a particular specialty or part of the world that you enjoy DXing?
Yes, my specialty is Latin American DXing, and I was very fond of Peruvian DXing in the late 60s and the early 70s, so I still fancy the Peruvian stations, and the Ecuadorian, but the Ecuadorian station, one in particular, made me stop sending letters to radio stations for QSL. I heard a very tiny station on in a 49-meter band called Radio El Mercurio in Cuenca. And it was also heard in Canada, and they received verification, but not me. So I was very disappointed, though I sent a follow-up. So that stopped my career as a QSL hunter.
I know what you mean. You can get kind of discouraged sending out the letters after letters and not hearing anything back. John, what kind of equipment do you have over there? And as you're answering that, I understand you're going to be on an island this weekend. Is that a special DX location for you?
Yes, I have a summer house in the near Karlskrona Naval Port, just 20 kilometers west of this naval port in the Baltic Sea. If anyone knows anything about Swedish geography and that medium wave transmitter, they can see that not far from that place is the Sölvesborg medium transmitter with the 1,500 kilowatts power. Reason I have to purchase a special receiver called Standard Radio CR91, who can cope with these strong signals into the antennas.
John, what kind of antennas would you have? Would you have the room to put up a beverage?
Yes. I have three beverages and three long wires, and I have a delta loop ribble for 60 meters and 45 meters.
John, on behalf of not just participants to NORDX, but for our listeners who are having a lot of fun this weekend, we all want to thank you for taking the trouble and the time of arranging these special broadcasts for us.
Yes, it's very nice to cooperate with a station like HCJB, as we call it, and especially in the back years with Sonia Persson in the Swedish department. So we love to send greetings to her from Sweden and all the Nordic countries. She has been so welcome to all our get-together here in Sweden through the years. So a special greetings to Sonia Persson.
John Ekvall, one of the organizers of NORDX 95. Again, those details on Saturday from 2230 to 2300 UTC. The station to listen for is Bangkok Radio from Thailand on 8208 and 6765 kilohertz. And on Sunday between 030 and 0100, Premier Radio from England on 1305, 1332, and 1413 kilohertz. John mentions in his facts that Radio Dublin from Ireland will be having a greeting to the contestants of NORDX 95. This is on 6915 kilohertz, 6915, Saturday between 1930 and 2000 hours UTC. John also mentions that this year there will be no Radio St. Helena Day, but Tony Leo, the manager, will come back with full strength and new ideas in 1996. The 96 broadcast is scheduled for Sunday, the 27th of October. So it won't be a Friday this time. It'll be Sunday, the 27th of October, 1996. We're offering a special QSL card for the DX party line this weekend in commemoration of NORDX 95. You don't have to be a participant in the contest to get one of the special QSL cards. Just send us a reception report with all the regular details, the time, frequency, date, name of the program, and at least 10 to 15 minutes of program details. Again, that's a special QSL card offered for this edition of the DX Party Line. And to all NORDX contestants, the very best of luck and have a lot of fun. We continue our series now on tropical band propagation from Asia, the long and the short of it, and that's really an article by the same name, written by David Clark and Tony Wood. It appears in the 1994-95 edition of Proceedings by Fine Tuning. We'll give you more information on how to order a copy of Proceedings in just a few minutes. This week, Alan Graham is going to be talking about transitional enhancement and also give you a wonderful example of afternoon DXing. And this will get you checking a WWV propagation forecast. See if you can experience an afternoon like the one that you're going to hear about in just a few moments. Geomagnetic and ionospheric storms are often responsible for the temporarily enhanced propagation of long-distance tropical band signals. This is sometimes along apparently direct paths, great circle paths. However, it also occurs frequently along skewed or bent non-great circle paths, both short and long, between Asia and North America. Long path enhancements tend to be the most dramatic. All of this differs from the conventional wisdom which associates normal path with multi-hop propagation along great circle bearings, usually short path, during a period of quiet solar activity. For a few weeks on either side of the winter solstice, a gray line path extends southeast from Ontario at a bearing of about 150 degrees across the equatorial zone, through the South Atlantic, just touching the eastern extremity of Antarctica, and up into eastern Indonesia. The path is almost perfectly centered on Ujung Pandang in Sulawesi province of Indonesia. However, the gray line zone extends as far east as Irian Jaya. The direct or great circle long path to Irian Jaya skirts just outside of the southern auroral zone during quiet conditions. The path is usually best when the geomagnetic field has been settled for several days.
Now, Gideon Jaya stations generally do not respond to a geomagnetic disturbance. In other words, they do not seem to propagate well, whether by way of the short path in the mornings or the long path in the afternoons. However, we have known them to make a better-than-average showing during the initial positive phase and sometimes early into the transitional phase associated with the onset of a geomagnetic storm. Logging afternoon extreme eastern Indonesians, that is, Irian Jaya and Maluku, during the short midwinter window is no mean feat, even from the east coast of North America. Unlike with the powerful signals from Ujung Pandang, the implied gray line condition does not render especially good signals. When signals are strong enough to produce even a little audio, this only lasts for as short a time as 5 or 10 minutes, and rarely more than 15 or 20. Of course, it must be recognized that a number of the relatively limited selection of target transmitters in eastern Indonesia are of only 1 kilowatt in power or less. The interesting thing about the Irian Jaya peaks is that they occur 15 to 30 minutes before sunset at the receiver and at and up to 15 minutes after sunrise at the transmitter. This pattern fits with the rule of thumb that the gray line at equatorial latitudes is about 30 minutes in width. Even so, since sky wave absorption increases rapidly after sunrise, one might have expected the peak to occur slightly earlier, towards the approach of transmitter sunrise, rather than immediately after. West of Ujung Pandang, at the center of the gray line, the midwinter pattern is reversed. Signals peak 15 to 30 minutes before transmitter sunrise, at which time it is already well past sunset at our receivers in Ontario. Now that we've set the stage, we take you back to January 11th, 1994. As it happened, both Tony Ward and David Clark were at the dials at midwinter afternoon. Their experience that day is quite notable. Eastern Indonesians were dramatically enhanced, as might be expected to occur during the positive phase of the ionospheric storm. Western Indonesians and other Southeast Asian signals were excellent too, as is typical of an enhanced long path opening to Southeast Asia at the very onset of a geomagnetic disturbance. In this case, the disturbance was caused from a large, favorably positioned coronal hole. Tony Ward recounts, "This day, I'm home at my suburban home near Toronto to take a look at the tropicals. At noon from school, a quick check of WWV at 18 past the hour promised an ionospheric storm, and I'm anxious to see whether the promise will be fulfilled. It's a quarter to four, 2045 UTC, and 2 hours before local sunset. The band is hopping with African signals on the southeast long wire I have selected. But I am after bigger game and have the R8's memories preset to the elusive Irian stations. They are a fair challenge on the morning short path, but I just know that under the right conditions, I can get more than the faint carrier I have heard on the afternoon opening so far this season. The solstice is past and time running out for this particular sport. It's early. The whisper of a signal is there already on 4789.7 kilohertz, and an even fainter hint of Thuringe on 4874.5. As the magic moment just before the hour approaches, I concentrate on the stronger of the two and yes, the lilting refrain of the Song of the Coconut Islands fills my ears. Success! Perhaps merely by remoteness made exotic, Radio Republic Indonesia from Fak-Fak. The signature tune resonates within me with the overlay of years of musical memories. The needle of the R8 hits S5 as the news from Jakarta comes through. But now I'm after the building signal of Thuringe, and down on 3385 Kupang promises to break through. 30 minutes later, they are in the log with the best audio I've ever got from them. What wonder how exciting the local news can be in a language I have no understanding of at all. But the lilting rhythm of the Malay tongue is unmistakable, and the village choir's voices leap around the globe in some strange way that I will try and fathom later. Right now, it's keep the tape whirring and listen for the jumbled ID phrases. I follow the sun up across the other side of the globe. Ujung Pandang on 4753.3 is 20 dB over 9 an hour later. What a day for the books. The sun is 30 minutes gone below my horizon, and somewhere a giant hand pulls the great switch in the sky. Ujung Pandang goes from local copy to a memory in minutes. But Kupang is a new one for me, and that will fade much more slowly from the mind. And then David Clark remembers. Tony's experience that afternoon affords a hint of the de-excitement we associate with chasing winter long-path Asians from the tropical bands when geomagnetic conditions are turning from quiet to active or even disturbed. In this particular case, Tony must have broken away from the dials for an early supper about the same time as I was tuning in at my rural property north of Toronto. Clearly, I missed a superior Eastern Indonesian opening, and those are pretty rare. But as he tuned out the fading Ujung Pandang a bit past 2200 hours, I found that the Sumatrans and other nearby peninsular Southeast Asians were just coming up nicely. Let's check the records. Yesterday, January 10th, 1994, planetary A index was a very quiet 04. But by 1800 today, the 11th, the real-time K index had jumped up to a value of 5, indicating a sudden onset of disturbed conditions. Very interesting. And we are not surprised. Reporting for the DX Party Line, I'm Alan Graham.
Thank you, Alan. Alan Graham reading from the article Tropical Band Propagation from Asia, the long and the short of it, written by David Clark and Tony Ward, and that appears in the 1994-95 edition of Proceedings from Fine Tuning. If you'd like more information from Proceedings, all of which we highly recommend, there are several of these volumes available, write to Fine Tunings Special Publications, care of John Bryant, B-R-Y-A-N-T, Route 5, Box 14, Stillwater, Oklahoma. And the zip code is 74074. And that's in the United States. From DX News now on the DX Party Line, Brian Sanford reposts a message that he found on Usenet by Malachi Murphy. RTE in Ireland announces that Ireland's shortwave radio service goes on the air for the second time this Sunday, tomorrow. Transmission starts at 3 p.m. Irish time. That's 1400 UTC, 1400. And the program will feature the All-Ireland football final, Dublin versus Tyrone. And they'll also have traditional music and an in-studio discussion. The service is provided through the assistance of the BBC and will broadcast on the following frequencies for Western Europe and North Africa on 9605, and for Western Europe, 5875 kilohertz, 5875. Both of those frequencies, transmissions coming from Great Britain. Again, that's tomorrow, Sunday, starting at 1400 UTC. Guy Atkins in Washington State sends in these reports for a very productive September 10th morning DX session. Australia, Alice Springs on 2310 kilohertz, parallel 2325 and 2485, with a pop music and listener call-in program. Signals were fair to good on 2310, 2325, and 2485 were both weaker. Indonesia, Radio Republic Indonesia from Mataram on 3222.8, heard at 1417 with an ID. Good signals. RRI from Dili, Timor on 3304.8 kilohertz at 1422 with Indonesian versions of old U.S. country and Western songs. Good levels but fading. RRI from Palangkaraya on 3325 kilohertz at 1428. With mentions of Palangkaraya at 1430, signals were good. RRI from Ternate on 3344.5 at 1435. They're down in frequency from nominal 3345. RRI from Kupang on 3384.9 at 1439 with an Indonesian ballad, advertisement with children's voices and nursery music.
guy adds that there was no sign of typically weaker RTM in Malaysia from Miri on 3385, leaving Kupang in the clear with fair signals. RRI from Pontianak on 3976.1 at 1450, still going strong, nearly an hour and a half past local sunrise. Guy says very little ham QRM since all of the continental U.S. was in sunlight by that time. Guy mentions that on coastal D expeditions with beverage antennas, Pontianak occasionally is heard weekly more than 2.5 hours past sunrise. And finally, from Guy Atkins, Lesotho, the hard way. Guy reports long path reception of Radio Lesotho on 4800 at 1440 UTC in Sesotho. Signals peaked rapidly to good levels at 1450, but then they faded to poor by 1505. Guy says the best reception was on a mini beverage antenna favoring Indonesia and Papua New Guinea. No other Africans have been heard this season so far on long path from Guy Atkins' location in Washington State. Earlier on in the program, we touched on the fact, the sad fact, that one can write to many stations these days, write to them over and over and over, not to get any reply. One sends nice letters with detailed reception reports in the right language. One encloses a tape recording of the station's signals, as well as postcards. Maybe a picture of oneself with one's child or cat listening to the station. And enough return postage to allow that station to answer 10 letters as well as take the entire staff out to dinner. But still no answer. It's discouraging. Have you ever asked God for something over and over and over and never seemed to get a reply? The Bible says God loves us. It even encourages us to pray about every little thing. So why is it that there don't seem to be answers at times? I've asked David Lowe to join us on the program today. David is a pastor who has recently been serving as a chaplain with the Canadian government in Orillia, Ontario, Canada. He's also a shortwave listener, and along with his family, he's here in Ecuador to help pastor us for the next year or so at HCJB. David, as a shortwave listener, you know the frustration of writing to a station and then not hearing from them. There can be various reasons as to why they won't answer. I think lack of staff and lack of interest in our reports are probably the main reasons. But what about our petitions to God? Isn't He interested in us?
Well, I've had the experience that it seems that God's not listening to me. But I believe God is very interested in us. God says, "I will hold you in the hollow of my hand." But sometimes, as I said, it seems that God does not listen. I think there are maybe several reasons, but I'll give two today that I think answer the question for me. When Daniel was praying, we are told that demonic powers hindered his prayer being answered for 21 days. God, it seems, allows Satan to work in this world. Now, that's a whole other topic that would be interesting to talk about sometime, why God allows Satan to work in our world. But it seems that prayer can be hindered, delayed by demonic powers. Also, sometimes we pray for things that will not be good for us, or that show we don't really trust in God. Many thousands of years ago in Moses' day, the people prayed for meat. All they'd had was manna, a sort of a type of a bread. And they were not satisfied with that food. God did answer their prayer for meat, but God knew they would be greedy with the answer to that prayer. They weren't really thankful for the meat they were given. I think God sometimes doesn't answer our prayers for our own protection, or to bless us to an even greater extent than we could think. Let me share my own experience with the silence of God towards my family. We were hoping to come here to Ecuador on July 24th. We'd prayed a lot, and we really felt that was God's will for us to be here. Well, the date got closer and closer, and we just didn't have enough money for our airfare. So we got very discouraged. I believed in God for a long time in my life. And so I thought, why aren't you hearing my prayers, God? I really didn't know then either. And as we went along, I continued to pray and saying, God, we want to get down here to Ecuador. And as time went on, God did begin to open the door. And we found out as we got preparing to come up that our airfare was going to be considerably cheaper than it would have been if we'd come on July 24th.
Mm-hmm.
And was that the reason God was silent before? I don't know. I won't know for sure, I guess, until I get to heaven. But I think that may be part of the answer.
So you're saying, David, that perhaps God does answer prayer. It's just that he's answering in a different way than we may be anticipating.
Yes, I believe that's really true, that God knows better what we need than we do ourselves at times. And I think that worked out for us and our own family as well. If you'd like to write me and discuss more about prayer, I'd love to hear from you. David Lowe at HCJB.
And our address is HCJB, box 17-17-691, Quito, Ecuador. David, we appreciate you being with us here on the DX Party Line today.
Thank you.
Here's a reminder about that special broadcast coming from Northern Ireland in just a few days. Chuck Ripple in Cornland, Virginia, has arranged with Radio Caroline Dublin to transmit their program at a time when reception in North America would be possible. That's going to be September 24th from 0000 through to 2000 UTC on 6260 kilohertz, 6260 with 40 watts. Reports containing 10 to 15 minutes of program details and a regular size self-addressed envelope along with two IRCs should be sent to Radio Caroline, 14 Lower O'Connor Street, Dublin 1 in the Republic of Ireland. Ernie Coral from Radio Havana, Cuba has been with us over the last week or so here on DX Party Line, and we'll continue now. He's going to tell us more about the early days of Radio Havana.
Actually, the transmitting plant located about 15 miles west of Havana, Cuba, was the first layout of the transmitting plant was started in late 1960. And the first Radio Havana, Cuba transmitter, a 1 kilowatt American-built transmitter that was already in Cuba, was put on the air in early February. But then by the 24th of February of 1961, Radio Havana Cuba went on the air with a Swiss-made 10-kilowatt transmitter under the name of Onda Corta Experimental Cubana. In other words, Cuba's experimental shortwave station. And it was operated under that name until May Day, the first day of May of 1961, when it officially went on the air as Radio Havana, Cuba. And it's something very interesting. All the assembly and the layout and the construction of the antenna systems, of the all the installations, was done by Cubans. And only one Swiss engineer came at the very end to do what is standard procedure for expensive broadcasting equipment, which is what is known in engineering as the final acceptance test. And I remember I had the unique opportunity of being present during the final acceptance test of the four Swiss-made Brombauer transmitters. It was quite a rewarding experience.
So you're not only a programmer, you're also a technical person.
Well, I see radio as a very broad thing. I think that when you really enjoy radio, you are able to see your modulation envelope at the same time you're talking. In other words, if you are an announcer and you don't know what's happening on the technical side, I don't see you a complete radio person. As a matter of fact, I lecture at the University of Havana School of Communication, and I make a lot of emphasis in the technical aspects of radio broadcasting. I think that you cannot teach someone broadcast journalism if this person is not fully familiar with all the technical aspects of the broadcasting as such. And the same goes for TV, I think. In present-day technology, if you are not aware of what's going on, if you are not familiar with all the very sophisticated technical equipment that is used, If you are not familiar with, for example, in TV, the high-speed editing and that sort of thing, you cannot do everything that could be done.
HCJB's Mark Irwin talking with Arnie Coro of Radio Havana, Cuba. We'll be continuing our chat with Arnie next weekend on the DX Party Line. We'd love to hear from you. Another reminder that we're offering a special QSL card for this weekend's edition of DX Party Line in commemoration of NorthX 95. Send your reception report to the DX Party Line, care of HCJB, Box 17-17-691, Quito, Ecuador, in South America. To all NorDXers, enjoy the late-night coffee and best of luck and fun with the contest. I'm Rich McVicker. Remember to have fun with that radio. Take the best of care, and God bless.